Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and today we are going to begin a look at the hoof, the animal hoof, specifically the horse hoof. Rob, how did you get interested in this?
Well, I was in New York last week with my family. We went to the American Natural History Museum and was looking at fossils and bones, and I was captivated by some of the bones of the horse, and started thinking about the hoof and just how strange the hoof is. Yet at the same time, we kind of take it for granted, because even if you are not a person who lives among horses and cares for horses, horses are everywhere in our imagery, in our iconography, in our entertainment. You can scarcely be a video game player at all without having mounted a horse or lost a horse or accidentally driven a horse off a cliff or up a wall at some point. Mm-hmm. So I was really taken by this. Like, I had not really in my life set aside any time to just consider the utter weirdness of the horse hoof.
I almost feel like the weirdness of the horse hoof is embodied in the sound of the horse galloping and how different that is from the sound of the movement of most other animals you'd think about.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the drumming of fingers on a table, right?
Yeah.
that's a tempting direction to go in anyway. Yeah, I feel like it's all too easy to take the hoof for granted, even in literature. I was thinking, well, we can kick off this episode with a nice little quote or a little reading from something that kind of captures, our current level of fascination with the hoof. But I really wasn't able to find much. Now, again, horses and hooves are just throughout human literature. They're everywhere. And there are a lot of literary references to hooves and the sound of hooves. One poem in particular that I found that I ultimately didn't like well enough to feature in the cold open, but is still notable, is "The Hoofs of the Horses" by William Henry Ogilvie, who lived 1869 through 1963. I don't know if you're familiar with this poem, Joe, but it's just all about how much he just absolutely loves the cadence of horse hooves.
No, I was not familiar with this poem before, but you did share it with me. It's an almost comical level of appreciation for horse hooves, an attitude very much of, I'll stop thinking about the sound of horse hooves when I'm dead, or maybe I won't when I'm dead. I'll still dream of them, even in the grave. It's also, it goes with the F plural. I looked it up to see, is there any difference, hooves versus hoofs? And it seems like no, both have been used in English. I think hoofs with the F plural is more archaic usually.
This is one of those poems that, you know, sometimes I read a really good rhyming poem with great cadence and you know, I'm like, why don't we rhyme our poems anymore? You know, all poems should rhyme. This is great. This is the opposite end of the spectrum for me. Like, this one's just kind of goofy. Like, it starts off, the hoofs of the horses, oh, witching and sweet, is the music earth steals from the iron-shod feet,
yeah,
et cetera. So it's not to my liking, but I can understand where someone else might love it as much as this man loved horse hoofs.
Well, it also commits the ultimate sin of rhyming above with love. That's, you can't come back from that.
But again, this is not the only account of hooves or mention of hooves in literature. Shakespeare writes of horses, quote, printing their proud hoofs in the receiving earth. Other quotes speak of the violence of the hoof, a thing that imprints the soil or even the flesh of those fallen in war. Here's a bit from The Jackery, a fragment by Sidney Lanier, who lived 1842 through 1881. Midst of the crowd, old Gris-Grion, the maimed, a wretched wreck that fate had floated out from the dear storm of battle at Poitiers, a living man whose larger moiety was dead and buried on the battlefield, a grisly trunk without arms or legs, and scarred with hoof cuts over cheek and brow, lay in his wicker cradle smiling. And then later on in the same scene, the protagonist comments that, quote, there is no face of man or woman here, but showeth print of the hard hoof of war.
Well, I think that's fair. As much as we can admire hooves from afar, I don't think you want to come into contact with one by way of force.
No, absolutely. You do not want to be kicked by a horse on one level, just for sheer strength and power of said kick or the weight of said step, but also, yeah, the hoof, as we'll explain, is not a, you know, an instrument you want making contact with your body with force or speed. Now, there are, of course, many references to the hoof in the works of Cormac McCarthy, though none that I could remember or search up that really goes in deep on the weirdness and wonder of the horse hoof. Still, here's a favorite from Blood Meridian. Quote, under the hooves of the horses, the alabaster sand shaped itself in whorls strangely symmetric like iron filings in a field, and these shapes flared and drew back again, resonating upon that harmonic ground and then turning to swirl away over the playa, as if the very sediment of things contained yet some residue of sentience, as if in the transit of those riders were a thing so profoundly terrible as to register even to the uttermost granulation of reality.
Wow.
Yeah, so great line. But also, you know, Cormac doesn't really go in hard on just how weird it is that horses are strange mammals running around on highly evolved, like, finger bones. Like, there's a weirdness to the hoof that he even doesn't get into, because it's just such a part of, say, the tapestry of the American West, you know, in the case of his Westerns. It's also possible that I'm forgetting some key line in another of his book, maybe the All the Pretty Horses or one of its sequels, but nothing came to mind or up in search when I was thinking about it just the other day.
Well, maybe here is an amazing place to start if you want to consider the more granular anatomy of the horse's foot and the hoof. So look at your hands there. You know, you got human hands, and extend the middle fingers on both of your hands. Obviously not if you're in a car
respectively,
or something. Yeah. Discreetly. Extend those two middle fingers. These are the analogous bone structures that evolved in the horse to become the part of the horse's body that makes contact with the ground. So when horses gallop, they are galloping on adapted versions of your middle fingers. So you just imagine running out that your two middle fingers in front, your two middle toes in the back. Those got really thick, really strong. Everything else kind of shrank back and receded in a way. We can talk later on about whether it makes sense to say that the horse still has those other fingers in some way or not. But basically, the part of the leg that is making contact with the ground and supporting the weight of the horse is the middle finger.
Yeah, which is just absolutely bonkers when you stop and think about it.
It is. And the genus to which horses belong is unique in this regard among the ungulates. So all of the four-legged vertebrates on Earth that live on land share a common ancestor that had five toes on each foot, had four legs and five toes on each foot. That's our heritage. And we walk around on two legs now, but we're still part of that evolutionary lineage. We still have five fingers on our hands and five toes on our feet to show for it. But some of our cousins in this lineage have undergone more radical transformations in the bone structure of these distal regions of the limbs, the ends of each limb. Hippopotamuses, for example, have four toes. Rhinoceroses and tapirs have three toes. Camels, deer, sheep, goats, and cattle have two toes. But there is only one group of animals existing today that has evolved to have a single toe that contacts the ground on each foot, and that is horses, or more precisely, the evolutionary group to which modern horses belong, which is the genus Equus, which includes horses, zebras, and donkeys. And the scientific term for having only one toe is monodactyly. So these monodactyls are out there running around on their middle fingers. That when you hear hoofbeats, that's what you're hearing, the middle fingers.
And, you know, again, this is super weird and glorious. But at the same time, it would be a mistake to think of this as a kind of simplification, you know, because the horse hoof, as we'll be discussing here, is anything but. It's a complex structure composed of hard, cornified structures, living tissues, tendons, ligaments, and more. There are the various bones we're going to be discussing. We should, also not make the mistake of overestimating the strength of the hoof, because yes, it's a highly evolved anatomical feature that serves a horse very well in its natural environment, but they are still susceptible to injury and illness and, the ravages of aging, plus domestication by humans has, of course, augmented the horse's natural environment and also changed the sort of regular wear and tear that they might endure on said hoofs. So what I'm going to do is going to provide kind of an overview of the different parts of the main outer and inner parts of the horse hoof, of the foot of the horse, not in a way that will just completely bombard the listener with horse terminology, but hopefully get across some of the complexity here. And if you are a horse person, and I don't know, maybe you're listening to this podcast whilst you attend to the hooves of a horse, you might have some added information to write into us about. If you're not a horse person, then I think you might find some of the terminology kind of surprising. I know, not being a horse person myself, I remember the first time I read Cormac McCarthy's Blood Meridian, there was a bit that really threw me for a curve. It goes as follows. Quote, he got down and drew up the horse's leg. The frog of the hoof was split and bloody, and the animal's shoulder quivered. He let the hoof down. The sun was about 2 hours high, and now there was dust on the horizon.
I don't know what that means, but it doesn't sound good. The frog of the hoof?
Yep. The frog of the hoof. The frog is a key part of the outer anatomy of the horse's foot. This is a wedge-shaped mass on the bottom of the horse's foot that, I suppose, kind of looks like a dark frog. According to Robert C. McClure et al. In a paper titled Functional Anatomy of the Horse Foot, this was for the University of Missouri, the frog is one of the flexible parts of the hoof's external structures. It normally makes contact with the ground first, and then it kind of like pushes into the digital cushion, an internal mass of flexible material above the frog that contributes to the formation of the heels and serves as one of the primary shock absorbers in the horse's foot.
This is an interesting balance to observe with the hoof here, in that it has the outer mass of the hoof that you will have observed before, the hard part is a hard keratin structure, and yet the hoof also has to remain somewhat springy and flexible. You don't want it to be like a piece of concrete that might be really hard, but on sufficient impact is rigid and cracks.
Yeah. Again, it would be a gross simplification to think of a horse as just running around on like wooden stilt legs, that its hooves are just like solid things. It's a lot more complicated than that. Now, you might be wondering, well, why do they call it a frog? You may be looking it up to see just how much like a frog it, you know, it, to what degree it resembles a frog. I've seen it described a couple of different ways, that either it does roughly look like a frog, and that perhaps there's this added level of, well, you find it under the hoof in the same way a frog might be found under a rock or leaf. I don't know, maybe. I've also heard that it really more accurately resembles the pelvic bone of a frog, which apparently was carried for good luck by horsemen. And this also might be tied to traditions of the horseshoe, which we're not going to really discuss in this episode, but we may get to in a subsequent episode, the use of horseshoes as lucky charms as well.
Interesting. Okay, I just looked up the pelvic bone of a frog. It kind of looks like the wishbone on a chicken. So yeah, I don't know. I'm looking at the frog of a hoof now. It's sort of V-shaped. I mean, you have to stretch your mind a little bit, but I could see that.
Now, the frog is apparently made up of the same material as the hoof wall. More on what do we mean by hoof wall in a second, but you can think of like the outer hoof as you see it. But it's more moist, certainly if it's healthy. Apparently something like 50% moisture or thereabouts. Now, and that's not to say that the hoof wall itself is dry. In fact, the hoof wall, or the proper, you know, hoof that you see if you're just looking at a picture of a horse, it's in fact covered with material that prevents moisture loss. And with domestic horses, hoof paint is sometimes added as well to help contain moisture. So again, even the hardest part of the horse's hoof cannot be really thought of as just this, rock, hard substance. Like it's organic structures, and there is moisture to them.
And with the keratin basis, I think you could probably think about it more akin to like a horn or like a thick fingernail.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, the frog, interestingly enough, is also a scent gland, along with the chestnut of the leg and the ergot of the fetlock. This is one of the reasons that dogs can track horses as well as they can. Plus, it's apparently one of the ways that horses sniff out each other in the field.
I had no idea.
Yeah, there's a whole, right underneath the horse's hoof, there's a whole wonderland of weirdness.
Well, this is funny because we were just talking about beavers, which apparently, their scent glands and scent markings play a big role in their behavior and how they interact with the environment. But I had no idea that was true of horses.
Yeah. Now, as we'll discuss in a bit, horse hoofs, the hard part of the hoof grows throughout their life and has to either be worn down or trimmed down. This is where professional farriers come into play with domestic horses. And not only do they have to trim the hoof proper, but they also have to trim the frog as it keeps growing as well. And if not maintained, it can lead to some infections, conditions like thrush and so forth.
Hmm.
I'm also told by horse and dog people in my family that dogs absolutely love it when their friendly neighborhood farrier gives them some hoof or some frog shavings to eat. Joe, has this ever been your experience?
No, I never had a dog get this particular treat, but I can imagine it's in the ballpark.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. All right, so moving outward from the frog, it pushes against the digital cushion, and when the foot is on the ground, the increase in pressure and change in shape in the digital cushion and the frog, it kind of works everything like a pump, forcing blood from the foot into the leg. And McClure stresses that, quote, exercise increases the blood circulation in the foot and favors good hoof growth. Lack of exercise, dryness of the horny wall, and poor nutrition inhibit hoof growth. All right, so let's get to that hoof wall.
Okay.
The hoof wall is exactly what it sounds like. It's that tough, horny outside part of the hoof that's essentially a fingernail. I mean, if we're comparing it to what we've got going on. It contains no blood vessels or nerves, and it grows continuously, so it has to be worn or trimmed off. And to be specific, the hoof wall grows out of the cornet located at the junction of the skin and the hoof wall. So if you're just looking at a picture of a horse's foot, like this is where hoof ends and the hairy part of the leg begins.
Mm-hmm.
Now, along with the frog and the bar, which is part of the wall, aka bars of the wall bordering the frog, it's a key weight-bearing part of the hoof. The wall is made up of the toe in the front, quarters on the sides, and the heel. Now, the interior of the hoof, inside the hoof wall, you can almost think of it as kind of like this little kind of U-shaped walled city, is the sole. Separated from the wall by the white line or the golden line, where the inner wall and the sole join together. The sole does not make contact with the ground, and it primarily protects the inner structures beneath it. So these are all, with the exception of the digital cushion that we referenced, like these are all things that you would see if you were if you were just attending to a horse's foot. If you were checking out a horseshoe or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, the hoof is a complex structure, and I'm not going to attempt to cover every detail of it. Instead, hopefully, we can cover the key parts of the inner and outer hoof here and provide like a decent audio snapshot of what it consists of. And I realize even with all the terminology we're going through, it still might make sense to look up a diagram to see exactly what we're talking about. Now, internally, it's, of course, essential to cover the phalanxes and phalanges, essentially the finger bones that make up the hoof. And the first of these to cover really is the famous coffin bone, which is also known as the pedal bone or the distal phalanx or P3. It's contained in the hoof capsule and provides its shape. It contains no bone marrow, but it has a lot of blood vessels. And the name apparently has to do with the fact that it's entirely seated within the hoof wall in the interior of the hoof, as if it were positioned within a coffin. It does not look like a coffin per se.
The fact that it seems to be positioned within a coffin, shouldn't that make it the corpse bone rather than the coffin bone or the cadaver bone?
You would think. I don't know. I couldn't run down any additional information on where this comes from other than just like, the built-up lingo of horse people over time.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have horse people out there listening to the show that have more insight on this, certainly write in.
Oh, please be gentle.
Well, they're used to working with horses, of course. They're gonna be gentle.
Okay.
Now, more broadly, the pedal bone is the bottommost bone in the front and rear legs of horses, cattle, pigs, and other ruminants. Then there's the navicular bone, so named because it's shaped like a boat. And looking at images of it, at least from the horse, I thought it also reminds me a bit of a whale's tail as well, but I'm to understand it's named this because it looks kind of like a boat. It's also known as the distal sesamoid bone. Most mammals have a navicular bone in their feet.
Hmm.
Then there's also the short pastern bone or middle phalanx. It's positioned atop the articulating joint of the pedal bone, with only the bottom portion extending to the hoof capsule, essentially a finger bone. So I don't know to what extent all of that accurately conveyed the complexity and the beauty of a horse's hoof, of a horse's foot. But I guess, if anything, it should remind you, like, the horse hoof, easy to draw, but far more complicated than you might think.
Well, another way to look at it is, like, if you look up a diagram of the bones in the horse's hoof, it's not just like a straight bone down to the ground ending in a nail. There are actually a lot of bones, little bones crammed up in there, kind of in the same way that you would see a lot of little bones making up the human hand, except in the case of a horse, it has been streamlined into one more continuous vertical structure or column, with the different bones kind of supporting each other in that column, as opposed to in the hand, the way these bones are kind of fanned out.
Yes.
Now, Rob, before we got recording today, you sent me a picture of a famous horse from, I was going to say history, but maybe better to say legend, the meeting point of legend in history, that really revealed something to me. And it's that there are certain features that are often quite surprising to discover are really unsettling to find on an animal. One example is if you see human teeth on a non-human animal, like a cat with human teeth, somebody photoshops that together, it's horrifying. You don't want to see it. And it's kind of surprising how horrifying it is. And I discovered a new one today when you shared this picture with me, and it is a horse with human feet. Don't like it. Something's unpleasant about that. It's not a good vibe.
Yeah, this is an engraving from 1687 attributed to P. Trochel. You can look this image up. I'll have to share it on some of our socials or something, because it's terrific and also a little bit horrifying, because the forefeet of the horse are human feet, or something close to human feet, with clearly visible multiple toes, like five human toes per foot. It does not make sense to look at. This does not seem like a good variation on the equine form. You know, it's not like, oh, like a centaur, where you can be like, well, it's like a horse and a rider as one. You know, it can run around, it can shoot arrows, that's great. Like, no, this is a situation where you're immediately thinking, shouldn't those front feet, shouldn't they have shoes on or something? How is this horse going to gallop? All sorts of questions and problems emerge.
You're exactly right. Yeah, this is a cat with human teeth. It doesn't look like it should work, and it doesn't look nice. However, I will say other things about this horse, and I guess in a minute we'll have to reveal what historical horse this is supposed to be. But first, just allow me to describe. This is a hair metal horse. It has a tail and a mane that are luxurious, glorious, voluminous hair just waving in the wind. You can imagine this horse really getting down on a guitar solo, playing with Striper or something. And then also this horse has, it appears to me, forward-facing eyes. Horses, I don't know, it doesn't quite get the horse face right.
Yeah, I mean, the artist was already having to draw those feet on this horse, so I think we can forgive them if they maybe didn't put a maximum amount of effort into the face.
Oh, I'm not holding a grudge against P. Trochel here, but forward-facing eyes implies that this horse is a predatory carnivore, which makes me think it is one of the Diomedean mares, or, you know, the flesh-eating mares of ancient Greek legend.
It made me think, too, of the horse that Ukla the Mock rides in Thundar the Barbarian, if anyone remembers that old Hanna-Barbera cartoon.
I had to look that up when you said it. I wasn't familiar, but that's like, it's kind of a dinosaur insectoid kind of horse.
Yeah, a monster horse, which you see, and especially sort of like some old-timey sci-fi and fantasy.
But okay, what's the deal with this horse? Who is this horse with human feet in the front?
This is none other than Julius Caesar's horse.
Huh.
Sometimes referenced by the name Astracus or Astracus, but the horse's actual name, whatever it might have been, seems to have mostly been lost to history. I don't know that it has a definite name. It's very much in the vein, in the tradition of, say, Alexander the Great's horse, Bucephalus. That one's a more famous horse that also ties back in a bit. This also tends to be part of the general tradition in the Greco-Roman culture of having like a great leader riding a great steed into battle that only they can mount, that is much loved, that will, of course, eventually die and will be remembered and so forth. But also there's this idea of like something strange about a horse. There's some sort of a physical portent of future success, or in some cases, dire omens tied up in strange anatomy of certain creatures, especially the horse. But anyway, so where does this come from? This idea that there's this horse, according to various sources, that had human feet in the front, or it had some sort of toes in the front. I had a time sort of trying to find any actual source on this, but a lot of it comes back to what the Roman imperial historian Suetonius had to say about it. This particular historian lived 69 through 122 CE. Here's what he wrote. Quote, "He rode a very remarkable horse, with feet almost like those of a man, the hoofs being divided in such a manner as to have some resemblance to toes. This horse he had bred himself, and the soothsayers having interpreted these circumstances into an omen that its owner would be master of the world, he brought him up with particular care, and broke him in himself, as the horse would suffer no one else to mount him. A statue of the horse was afterwards erected by Caesar's order, before the temple of Venus Genetrix."
Ah, that would be the temple of the Venus of motherhood, Venus of the, as the founder of the family. I wonder what that would have to do with the horse.
Well, I guess maybe it has to do with the rearing and the breaking of the horse, that he's kind of like the mother of the horse. Maybe it means it was a female horse. I'm not sure exactly why that particular temple.
Interesting.
So anyway, some illustrations, as much like the one we've discussed already, depict this as just a straight up monster horse with human feet in the front, which I love. But a more reasonable interpretation is that this was a polydactyl horse, much in the same way that you'll occasionally find, say like a polydactyl cat, or of course, polydactyl digits in human beings as well.
Hmm.
I found an 1879 paper on the general topic of polydactyl horses by Othaniel Charles Marsh, titled "Polydactyl Horses Recent and Extinct." He writes, quote, "Numerous cases of extra digits in the horse have been recorded, and in nearly all of them, a single lateral hooflet was present on one of the forelegs. In most instances, the occurrence was noted chiefly on account of its rarity, and no record was made of the exact position of the extra hoofs with reference to the main digit, nor the significance of these useless appendages."
Oh, okay. So the idea here would be that if there is anything to the story that Suetonius tells about Caesar's horse, it might be just that the horse did actually have extra toes, not that it had feet that looked like a human's feet, but that it was a case of polydactyly in this horse.
Exactly. Yeah, that seems to be like the more likely interpretation. It's also worth noting, I believe Marsh mentions this as well, that some accounts may have indicated that Alexander the Great's horse, Bucephalus, was also polydactyl, in which case, if that was if that was an idea already present, that would, of course, inform either the selection or interpretation of a polydactyl horse for another great general. So, we have to take that into account as well. And again, this general idea that if there's something strange going on with an organism, it there might be something about it that is a beneficial portent for the receiving individual. I believe we touched on one of these stories regarding, if not Caesar, another Roman emperor in episodes over the last couple of years. And I don't believe it was a horse. It was some other animal that was brought before the general and said, "Hey, look at this weird creature." And everyone was like, "This is great. This means the campaign is going well."
Okay, folks, we just had to take a second to dig this up because it was too good of a memory. No, this was something from our goats episode, right, that we did last October.
That's right, right. Yeah, this concerned a goat creature that was brought to Sulla And it was, I think the main interpretation was like, yeah, this is great. This is an omen. This means that we're going to be successful in the campaign.
It was like somebody found a half man, half goat in a cave somewhere. And then they're like, hey, look at this.
Yeah, it made horrible sounds, etc. So go back and listen to that episode if you want the full story on that and just goats in general. The cloven hoof as opposed to the horse hoof.
That feeling when you find a goat man in a cave and you know everything's going to be all right.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. All right. Anyway, back to Marsh here. Marsh noted that, I didn't look for other sources on this, but kind of casually, he mentions that the indigenous peoples of the Americas were said to have described the horse when the Spanish arrived as the beast with one fingernail, which of course is rather correct, as we've been discussing. And then Marsh goes on to point out that there are two slender splint bones within the hoof, the remnants of two other toes belonging to the ancestors of the modern horse. Now, Marsh points out a few other key facts that I think are worth mentioning here. The forefeet are the most affected when you look at accounts in the records of polydactyl horses. It's almost always the forefeet. And of course, this would match up with the story of Caesar's horse. Also, the additional hooves, or if you want to call them toes, seem to generally amount to one or two. So you're maybe looking at three toes maximum on a front hoof, though it's not necessarily an equal amount on both forefeet. So, like one, there's an account that he points to where an animal had two hooves on one and three on the other. So one extra on one forefoot and two extra on the other forefoot. Some of the horses, and this is English, this is not getting into, in any translations here, but in English, some of these were described as having eight hooves or the like, thus counting all of the hoofs on the animal. So this is just me, but I can imagine, first of all, a three-toed forefoot reminding one of a human foot, looking at it and being like, oh, it's kind of like toes. Look, there are three of them. Mm-hmm. I can likewise imagine some manner of telephone game deviation occurring when describing a horse and saying, oh, it had five toes. Well, what do you mean by that? Do you mean that it just has a single extra hooflet on one of its forefeet? That would be a reasonable case, I think, based on what I've been reading here. Or are you going to interpret that as, oh, well, that means it has five hooves or five toes to a foot, something that is too extreme based on what I've been looking at.
I see what you mean. But like the statement about having total across the animal could be interpreted as on one leg.
Right. Yeah. That's me thinking about it. Marsh didn't discuss that idea. But it just has me wondering if that's the sort of thing that could be going on here as well. Now, there are plenty of recent accounts of polydactyl horse hooves and photos, of course. You can do an image search and you can find images of horses that have additional hooves or hooflets or toes or whatever you want to call them. Most accounts I came across of in terms of like veterinary literature dealt with congenital abnormalities that were at least in some cases surgically corrected. So this is, I guess, in the horse world, these are rare enough to be notable, but certainly not so rare that they're unknown. So it's not beyond the realm of possibility, it seems, that yes, Caesar may have had a polydactyl horse, acquired a polydactyl horse, it's also equally likely that this is just all, you know, legend building in order to, you know, build up the case that, hey, Caesar is a lot like that guy Alexander the Great. Both of them rode around on deformed horses. Both of them were destined for greatness.
Now, you mentioned a minute ago when you were citing the paleontologist Othniel Charles Marsh that he had written that horses have these little splint bones within the hoof, which he attributed to being remnants of other toes that used to belong to the ancestors of horses today. And it turns out that's actually on to something because I was reading some stuff about the evolution of the horse hoof. This is an interesting and broad topic that's going to have to span into the next part in the series. But just to introduce a bit of it here, I was looking at an article in the New York Times called How Horses Got Their Hooves by Steph Yin, published August 28th, 2017. Now, this article is mainly responding to a journal article that was published in Proceedings of the Royal Society B Biological Sciences in 2017 by authors Brianna K. McHorse, good research focus there, Andrew A. Bewinner, and Stephanie E. Pierce. And the paper is called Mechanics of Evolutionary Digit Reduction in Fossil Horses, meaning the Biological Family Equity. Now, what this journal article did is it added some evidence to comment on the long-held hypothetical story of horse hoof evolution, which is based somewhat on fossil evidence and inferences from other sources. But basically, the story that experts have long believed goes something like this, that the earliest horses were small, much smaller than horses today. They were sort of dog-sized animals that lived in forested areas. And they had multiple toes per foot. So you have to imagine like small little, you know, doggy horses that had at least three toes per foot. I think maybe four toes on their front legs and three toes on their back legs. And then came some climate change. About 20 million years ago, some of these horses were living in previously forested habitats that changed into grasslands and plains. The disappearance of forests and the transition to grassland environments put different adaptive pressures on these herbivorous four-legged animals. And you might imagine there could be a lot of different pressures there, but one example would be if you're not in a forest, if you're in a grassland instead, it is a lot easier for predators to see you. It's harder to hide. And so this could drive the evolution of larger bodies as a defensive adaptation. You need to make it easier to defend yourself, and it could also lead to selection for speed in order to be able to evade predators. And so the story goes, for some reason, this shift to becoming an animal that needed to be both big and fast caused the selection of the single toe for the contact point with the ground, as opposed to the previous version of this animal, which had multiple toes per foot. Now, the authors of the study investigated this hypothetical evolutionary trajectory by analyzing leg fossils from 12 different types of horses over evolutionary time, going back as far as 55 million years ago, all the way up to modern horses. And the researchers had previously investigated the different types of physical stress put on horse legs by various types of normal behaviors, like trotting around, jumping, or speeding up into a run. And using this information about the physical stresses on horse legs, they created a model of how these activities would put stress on the legs of the horse, and then tested that model against different forms of the horse's foot with different numbers of toes. And what they found was that when horses were smaller and also had multiple toes contacting the ground, the extra digits were actually important for carrying the weight of the body. Body weight was distributed across multiple toes. But as horses got bigger, the toes on the sides began to shrink and essentially disappeared as distinct digits, leaving only the single middle toe, again, the middle finger hitting the ground, as the single mighty hoof. This is the lone contact point with the earth now. So it seems pretty clear that this is the trajectory that happened over the evolutionary history of horses, or horses, zebras, and donkeys. But why did the side toes disappear? This study in particular does not answer that definitively, but in the New York Times article, they interviewed the lead author, Brianna McHorse, and she suggested that maybe it's that having just a single toe made it easier for the horses to move their feet more quickly, using the comparison of like trying to run with ankle weights on, or I think of the experience of trying to run in heavy boots, which I've done. It's very difficult to do. You know, running shoes tend to be very lightweight.
That's a good point.
And one thing this does highlight is the kind of paradox of the behavior, the graceful behavior of the horse. It is like strange to observe how graceful and quick horses are given their size. Though I would like to point out that while horses are sort of a peak example of this, I'm often struck by the shocking speed and grace of even much more modest displays by animals like bovines. Like, have you ever seen a cow just suddenly jump over a fence and it didn't look at all like that was something that could happen until you saw it? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially with cattle, because a lot of times they do appear to be not moving a lot. But when they do move, it can be kind of shocking.
Yeah, cows can look like four-footed barges. Like, they should not be able to move at anything other than kind of a shuffle. But then suddenly you see them leap over a fence or something like that. Now, of course, cows, as a reminder, are not single-toed ungulates like horses. Cows have two toes per foot, and they've got the hooves on the two toes. But yeah, so you multiply that to an even greater extent with horses. When you actually see them up close and see how big the animal is and then how fast and gracefully it moves, something seems like wrong. It's like, how is it doing this? And it seems quite likely that the single-toed point of contact with the ground is part of that equation. That is how the horse is possible.
You know, I think this might touch on another reason that in literature and like culture in general, there's less focus on how weird the hoof is. And more just on like the majesty of the horse, because watching like the sum total of all of this, watching a horse run, it's enthralling. Like it's hard to imagine like riding along in a car and someone like saying, "Hey, look over there, those horses in that field are running," and being like, "Ah, I'm good. I don't need to see that." No, of course you want to see that. There's just something about it. I don't know, you know, how much of it is just the majesty of the creature itself, how much of it is like the historical and cultural weight of horses. But, you know, it's like they fascinate us. They've always fascinated us, you know, since time out of mind, since, you know, before our ability to even scrawl them roughly on a cavern wall.
I'm not even one of those horse people. You know, there are like horse people and then non-horse people. I'm a non-horse person, but when I let myself be amazed, it they are amazing. I guess this is what it's like 24/7 to be a horse person.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I'm not like, if you ask me, "Hey, do you want to ride a horse this afternoon?" I would probably say, "No, thank you. I'm good. I did it once. I'm fine. It's not my thing." But again, if you were to point out the window and say, "Hey, there's some horses running. Would you like to slow the car down and take a look at this?" I would say, "Yes, please. Let's watch," because watching horses, that's more my speed.
Okay, well, I think we're going to have to cap part one of this series there, but we will be back to talk about the hoof some more. I know we have plenty more questions and ideas to get into about the evolution of horse hooves. And also, we want to talk about the invention of the horseshoe.
Yeah, because that is a key invention in the human relationship with the horse. And also, I think understanding the horseshoe helps us understand the hoof a little bit more as well. In the meantime, if you have anything you'd like to write in and share with us about horses or their relatives, anything in general about hoofs, or you know, horse-like steeds in fantasy and science fiction, everything's fair game. We'll share that email address in just a minute. But in the meantime, you can also check out other episodes of Stuff to Blow Your Mind and the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed, wherever you get your podcasts. Core episodes on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Listener mail on Mondays. On Wednesdays, we do a short-form artifact or monster fact episode. And on Fridays, we set aside most serious concerns to just talk about a weird movie on Weird House Cinema.
Huge thanks to our excellent audio producer, JJ Posway. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves, so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait!
Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.